Off top. So there are 300 million Earth-like worlds in the Milky Way. Do you think Nathaniel Hackett knows how to call timeouts in one of them? Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Fun games, I think, right? The Monday night doubleheader. I know people complained about it a little bit, but I mean, I kind of like flipping back and forth. My man Orlovsky, I thought, did a great job on his game, but it was exciting. Even though they weren't close, it was exciting. What are the chances? That's the Super Bowl matchup we have, Bills versus Eagles. I'd be half right because I got the Eagles going. And on the other side, I don't know about the Bills.
What? That was your takeaway? That you're not sure about the Bills?
Oh, no. That wasn't my takeaway. I'm saying my preseason picks. Okay. Like, my preseason picks. Like, yeah, the Bills look pretty freaking good. But, I mean, the Titans aren't good.
What a fall off for the Titans. The Titans are bad this year.
Yeah, I mean, the Titans weren't good last year. Yeah. But they were the number one seed. And, yeah, they got worse, which we all knew. They lost Taylor Lewan in the first quarter. I mean, this game was, like, riddled with injuries, some really scary ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, Titans are not good. They got worse this season and they got worse in the course of this game. And Josh Allen, like, what it seemed like happened to me was they came out with the game plan of too high on like late downs to keep Josh Allen from the big plays. But on early downs, they were committed to like a cover three. And then they started throwing on early downs and Josh Allen started eating that cover three up. He was manipulating the linebackers. Cover three is not a great coverage. Like, it's not really going to shut that too many teams down if they know it's coming. So early downs, they attacked the cover three. He manipulated the linebackers in the coverage. The receivers were really good. And then the Titans got a little desperate and then they started putting their guys in man coverage and they started blitzing a little bit more often. And yeah, that's not going to work. And Diggs, I believe that Diggs is the top of the I'm him rankings right now. I've decided that he is the number one him because he can't be guarded in man coverage and not with Josh Allen recognizing coverages the way he was. I think that first touchdown to Diggs was a really impressive play by Josh Allen's man coverage. Josh Allen rolls left. And the corner who's supposed to be covering Diggs, as Diggs runs right, that corner falls off. Josh Allen immediately recognized that, which has to be really hard to do, and throws across his body back across the field to an unguarded Stephon Diggs for a touchdown. That was early in the game. The rest of the touchdowns were just Diggs kind of matched up. One was cover three. He hit like kind of a deep skinny, if there's such a thing, right in the seam. And then the last one was kind of a blitz, aggressive blitz play. And they did a little, looked like an RPO that sucked everybody up. And the poor corner, rookie corner out there against Diggs, isolated with no safety help, essentially in zero coverage with no pressure. You can't expect him to win like that. So, yeah, that game was over quickly.
It was absurd. I mean, that team was so fun to watch. And, I think you made a really good point of putting Steph Diggs at the top of the him rankings. And that ties into the other game because we thought Justin Jefferson could be the top of the him rankings this year. But prime time Kirk, baby. Worst quarterback in Monday Night Football history. Showed up. He is not him.
He is. So first of all, I tweeted this out. Quarterbacks can't be hims. That's just a rule that I've made. Because they get to be MVPs, they get to win the Heisman, they get to be everything on all levels. They don't deserve as much credit as they get, but they get it. So officially, Josh Allen is great, but he can't be a him. You got to be a skill player to be a him. Or you could be a defensive or offensive lineman to be a him right now.
No. It's an indictment of a quarterback if he calls himself him, because he has to say we. We won.
Yes, we are him. It's the only way that quarterbacks can involve themselves in the him. But yeah, so Justin Jefferson thought he was going to be him. He's dropped down the him rankings because they shut him down. But it's not fair to talk about Kirk Cousins in the Vikings and not Jalen Hurts. Like this game, this whole night was about Jalen Hurts. He like came out and he was like 10 for 10 off the top. He ended up with over 300 passing and a touchdown. Like more than 50 rushing and two rushing touchdowns. And it wasn't, And some of it was
the second one was sick, by the way. We should, yeah. The second one was not like a quarterback, just like
the first one was sick.
Yeah.
He got in the middle of all that action. We talked about, we heard about his 600-pound squat entirely too many times. And I got to give Troy some credit. He asked the right question. Why?
Why?
Yeah. He just flat out was like, you squat 600 pounds? Why? As someone who used to squat a lot of weights unnecessarily and my back now hurts because of it. Yes. Why? That's not making you a better quarterback. I feel like once you get over like 425, diminishing returns at that point. It's no reason to do. But anyway, it worked out for him. His back doesn't hurt just yet. But what I was going to get to is it didn't feel like there were some gimmicky plays in there.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like they were gimmicking. Like, he was out there like, I used to call him a poor man's Lamar Jackson, but he's like upgraded to like discount Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Like, this game was MVP caliber numbers he put up, and it wasn't all attacking the edge. He's attacking the middle of the field and eating their zone up. I was really impressed with Jalen Hurts, and this defense is loaded.
The defense is loaded. I mean, the weapons are loaded. I just thought, like, patience and him throwing the ball, he looks night and day from last year. I'm not going to pretend that I was always a believer in Jalen Hurts throwing the football, because it was really rough in, you know, high leverage situations the last 2 years, but he's in control in the intermediate and short routes that he was not in control of last year. And this isn't like you pointed to the numbers, which is right. That's the right way to do it. But also just watching him play, yeah, it's so much, the game has slowed down so much for him.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm not quick to give coaches a lot of credit, but I think Nick Sirianni, I remember thinking kind of dismissively of him. Came in with some foolish, like, rah-rah nonsense, like, and I wasn't a fan of it. But ever since they kind of shifted to building, and this is what coaches are supposed to do, build an offense around the players you have. Don't complain about how you don't have a good quarterback and wait for the draft next year and all. That's not what they're doing there. And they built the offense around him, and they have a team that's really loaded. It didn't seem like he was ever under pressure. They were protecting the hell out of him in the course of the game, and they got him weapons, and he just was doing his thing. And when nobody was open, he would tuck it and run. It seemed like the team that I expected them to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even better than that, honestly, because I can't say that I expected Jalen Hurts to pass the ball as well as he did tonight. And it was at all levels. Like, he hit deep balls, he hit intermediate passes, he attacked over the middle of the field. I'm not sure if I saw any like deep outs or deep comebacks, but maybe that'll come. But if you don't have to throw that, then fine, don't ever throw it. But I really like how they went into empty for him to start off. I generally like that for young quarterbacks. I know it kind of telegraphs to the offense or to the defense that you're passing the ball, but I guess it doesn't.
Not with him.
But the reason why I like it is you spread them out and you force the defense to declare. It's easier to disguise when all the offensive players are in tight, because the guy who's blitzing and the guy who's covering the blitzing, they're all like jumbled together. It's harder to read. I love the idea of spreading it out early for them, and it kind of tells the game plan. So you see, defenses don't come into a game with every play in the playbook. They come into the game with a specific game plan, with a handful of blitzes, a handful of coverages. If you run a lot of zero, or excuse me, run a lot of empty early, they're going to show you their blitzes and coverages early, and then you can adjust from there. And they use that, like, recon time. They were also scoring and moving the ball in that process, and I was really impressed with this team. And, I mean, go back to episode one, institutional stability. it's a well-run organization that seems smart and prepared for all situations.
I would also just like to take this moment to congratulate the Philadelphia Eagles on winning the NFC East. I think we can say that officially. So congratulations. You have outclassed the Cowboys, the Washington Commanders, and I know the Giants are 2-0. Giants fans come at us, but yeah, Eagles are the NFC champs.
I'm a big Giants fan. They are. I'm atop the ESPN analysts rankings right now as far as picking games. In large part because I picked the Giants
twice
in week one and week two, and they pulled it out for me. Those were Those are the ones where other people were, where everyone else is going the other way. So I love my Giants, but they're not going to win this division. Is there anything else that you want to cover from either of these games? Did I hit everything that was important? Or any questions you got, everything that matters before we hop into the time machine?
I think it's time to hop into the time machine.
All right. Good times. Get a good night's sleep. See you bright and early tomorrow morning. Let's hop in the time machine.
All right. Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. What up, Charlie?
I am exhausted and excited after another Sunday of football.
I feel better this week. Last week really kicked my ass, but I'm playing myself into shape. I feel okay this week. And I feel like last week it felt like a whirlwind. And I didn't even really have a bunch of great takeaways because it just was so much football. But I'm back in my rhythm. I know how to watch games and budget my time. And now I got some good takes for y'all.
Yeah, I mean, football tolerance, you gotta build that up. It's no one's a natural at watching, 15 hours of football a week. Where do you want to start? Where do you want to start this week?
Tom Brady, the Brady Cliff. We gotta talk about it.
I agree. And I have
I didn't even make a take yet. You already agree?
No, I agree that we have to talk about it because I think there are two questions, one on the surface and one below. And I think the Brady Cliff question I want to ask, let's go surface first. Are we still sure Brady's that good?
No. No. I don't know how to answer that question. I am sure that Brady is not that good.
But why?
Because, yeah, it's not fair of me. I've watched two games. I think what it is that we have so much history with Brady, and we've all been burned because we all, whether you said it out loud or not, you all thought Brady was done after he left after he left New England, and he wasn't. And so we all got burned and we're nervous about saying it again. But there are too many damn signs. Like, it's easy to explain what happened when he went to Tampa Bay. He left a team that didn't have weapons, and he went to a team with an incredible offensive line and weapons, and he played well. And there are too many signs right now around him. The man quit and came back. He disappeared for 11 days in training camp. He hasn't really thrown the ball well so far this season. And also, he's 45. Like, I think that that's enough evidence. And maybe I'm jumping to conclusions because it's only been two games and he's had like three good passes in the two games. But I think it's reasonable to think that he's finally going to be average.
Yeah, no. And my question about that is, okay, what's the problem with him game managing right now, though? And the reason I say that is because it's like yesterday he played with Breshad Perriman and Scotty Miller after Mike Evans got tossed and Chris Godwin's hurt and Gronk hasn't unretired yet. So that defense is really good. They keep winning by double digits. Like, pacing versus washed is the question, because why can't he game manage the first few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's not the question. He can definitely game manage the first few weeks. I mean, he won his first Super Bowl game managing. He is capable of being a game managing quarterback. I guess the real question is, with this team and this defense, are they a legitimate Super Bowl contender? And that's when I think I might have to back off my take of Brady is nearing the Brady Cliff.
Yes, that's it. Because in the NFC, why aren't they a Super Bowl contender?
And they're so good everywhere else. And they're going to ask Brady at some point to reach back and become the old Brady. And I'd be stupid to say that he can't do that once or twice this season, particularly in a playoff. So I think they're in good shape to win the division once again, and maybe even have one of the best records. I guess now you have to have the best record. So I don't see them having a first round bye because I don't think they're going to have the best record in football or in the NFC, which I guess they possibly could. But that's where the sharpness of my take, it dulls a little bit because he's smart enough to manage his way through all of this and also lead a game winning drive in the playoffs if need be. And his defense is good enough to keep them in games. He's not as bad as Peyton was his final Super Bowl season, but if the Broncos can do it with a shell of Peyton Manning, there's no reason why the Bucs can't do it with a much better version of Tom Brady than that version of Peyton Manning.
I mean, I agree. And I think it's like, this is really interesting because Tom Brady was so good that his like fall off is like, has been somewhat incremental, but yeah. To your point of him only needing to make a couple throws, all right, Mike Evans gets Marshawn Lattimore tossed. Like three plays later, he reaches back into the time machine and drives the ball down the right sideline for a touchdown.
Gosh, that like when we say he reaches back into the time machine to win, because that You're wasn't right. the Brady when he was young. That Brady is relatively new. That's like that's Randy Moss Brady and that's Tampa Brady. That he rarely threw balls like that, at least in my memory, when he was any other time in his career. And I guess that's not what they asked him to do, but he still has that, which I guess is why. And he still makes good enough decisions, but he seems frustrated too.
Oh, yeah.
With himself, which is a rarity, I guess, for Brady.
I mean, to push you back to the Tom Brady Cliff question, I mean, it is weird. And if this is the beginning, like, This can always be an inflection point where it can get worse. I pitch that it's going to get better as he game manages so. And is like, but it could easily get worse. I mean, you can tell me how weird this is. Does anyone care on the team that he's taking half the week off now that he's off Wednesdays also? It even matter that he missed 11 practices?
Hell no.
Yeah. So
I don't think it matters. I think it matters because of what it tells us about what's happening in and around him. I don't think it matters for game preparation or for how the team thinks about him. He's still a god to them.
Yeah.
Like Mike Evans got himself tossed out the game because he said, that's Tom Brady. He went and fought for Tom Brady because we all know Tom Brady's not going to be out there fighting. That would be ridiculous. But Mike Evans, who's probably, I mean, all pro, not probably, he is an all pro, is out there diving in front of Marshawn Lattimore and I guess he has beef with Marshawn Lattimore, so he just needed a reason. But the point is, the respect for Tom Brady is on another level. I think if he just showed up on Sundays, the team would still rally around him. That won't be a prop.
And from a non in the locker room guy perspective,
mm-hmm.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if he's off basically those days, is he missing install or something? Are they installing stuff over the week that makes them more limited by Tom Brady not being there?
So Tuesday is the off day. Monday is normally the game plan day and like work out the lactic acid in your body. So missing Monday doesn't matter. Tuesday is normally off. Wednesday is first down, first and second down install normally. So that's when they install the game plan. So if he doesn't practice, that's different than not being there. Like he'll be there.
Mm.
But and I'm sure he has some say so in the game plan. So he'll be involved in that. I don't think he needs to be on the field throwing necessarily, but I don't think he can just parachute in. You know, like you have to do walkthroughs where you're talking through adjustments and those sorts of things. That will make them worse. Whether he actually goes out on the field and does full practice or not, which I would say it doesn't matter, but like, why would he not? I understand when I play like the vets. And like the Pro Bowlers didn't practice every week and that sort of stuff. And that mattered some because it's taxing to practice, but not at quarterback. Like, I don't see why he can't practice during the week. What are you proposing, that he goes home and just like studies the iPad and then shows up on Sunday only?
No, I just think it's weird. It's like this guy has his entire lifestyle is now a method of being obsessed with his job and being obsessed with football and seeing little cracks in that. And, you know, cracks gone from his forehead, his teeth, his veneers are perfect, but the cracks are in him as a football player in his preparation.
He led the league in passing yards last year.
I like how we flipped on this. It started me talking you down for the Tom Brady cliff, and now I inch towards it. I was like, whoa, 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 let's not defend Tom Brady too much.
It's just mind-blowing. I guess. Yeah.
Oh, no.
He led the whole league in passing yards last year. Mm-hmm. Like, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, Matt Stafford, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen. Tom Brady had more passing yards than all of them and 43 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. So, yes, he's going to fall off of that cliff. But where he's going to land is like still top half of the league. And when you have as much talent as they have. So it just feels like we went a long way talking about Tom Brady to come to the conclusion that they're still one of the favorites in the NFC. And maybe Tom Brady will retire. But we really ain't said shit. We just did a whole lot of talking and ain't said nothing.
That's right. We talked all around it. and said absolutely nothing. Plus, they're going to get Godwin back, who's really their number one receiver, and Julio Jones was randomly fast again in week one, and he's going to be their new Gronk. So, yeah.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Let's move on to the guy who is going to take over the mantle as the best high-end game manager in football, Tuanon, my guy, Tua Tagovailoa.
I have a question. What is he definitely a game manager? Like, if Tua plays like yesterday and the Dolphins are absolutely loaded, what's his ceiling and their ceiling?
Yeah, their ceiling, I expect better from their defense.
Yeah.
Because their defense has guys, a bunch of guys, and they played really well last year. But yeah, they're a legitimate AFC contender. If the Bengals can stumble their way to the Super Bowl last year, I think the Dolphins can also. But they got playmakers everywhere and speed everywhere. You can't double team everybody, including Gesicki, who is out of the doghouse and still doesn't know how to block, but runs routes and attacks the secondary in a way that other tight ends can't.
Doesn't know how to gritty either.
Oh my gosh. That's not. Is the gritty dead now? Did he kill it? Are players still going to do it?
Honestly, he was so bad that he was good at it. You don't want to be mediocre at anything. And he made an entire new dance out of it. But I think
where's he from? Like, it just looked like someone who had never danced. Is he from like, I'm about to make myself sound really old. Is he from the city in Footloose where they're not allowed to dance? Oh man.
I've never seen that movie. He's from Manahawkin, New Jersey.
New Jersey? That's like New Yorkish. Like, you should be able to hit some. Well, I guess gritty is a Louisiana thing, but he should do better than that. That was embarrassing, unacceptable. And you think that it was so bad that it was good. I don't know. And the other, this came to mind too. Like, and I guess we could talk about it. We go to other games. I'm him. Like, it's still cool now.
No, it's not. I can feel it. It's not cool.
It's already dead. I'm him.
Okay. It's definitely not cool because it's reached the stage where you have 30-year-old not cool people jokingly calling themselves Timothy in text threads. Yeah. And like, I am him. I'm going to tell you something. Once I have like my friends texting that as like a bit, not cool anymore.
I think so. I disagree with you. I think it's still cool until it becomes like identified with someone who is not cool. Like, I think that you guys doing it in your friend circle is like ironic, clearly, you don't know no hymns. So it's fine and it's fun. But once, like, I don't know, once we get politicians doing it, I think that's the bar. Once Joe Biden is like, I'm him, then it's dead. It's all the way done when we get politicians doing it. Or also Greenberg, my guy Mike Greenberg, he can kill a fag in a second. I think that's when dabbing stopped. When I saw Greeny hit a dab, I was like, all right, shark, it's been jumped.
See, I was gonna say it was Dan Le Batard. Dan Le Batard's gonna like get you on a Monday, and he's gonna stick his hand out and do the like the come hither motion. He goes, Dominique, explain the I'm him thing to me. Am I him? Am I him? Am I not him?
You are. I mean, I guess I was going to say he's not him, but if you've ever been on South Beach walking around with Dan Le Batard, he surely feels like him down there. They treat him like him. Anyway, get back to the real him, too.
Yes.
My guy. He's absolutely incredible. The yak that he creates because of his accuracy and the speed, the pretzels and defenses contorted into by having to account for Waddle and Tyreek Hill. It feels unbeatable. It feels impossible to fully stop. And they still have speedy running backs and Gesicki down the middle and a defense that can play well. The thing about Tua, after week one, I tweeted out that people should be impressed and excited for Tua. And I got a lot of pushback because he didn't play great in that week one game. But what I saw was like decisiveness, anticipation, and accuracy. And I don't think that he is going to be Josh Allen. So cool it on that, but he has the guys. If he can do that continuously, this offense is going to be really, really tough to stop. And they came back from down 21 in the fourth quarter on the road against a good team. Like, I think we need to give some love to Mike McDaniel too. He's knocked off Harbs, Belichick and Harbs 1-2, like two of the best coaches in football. That's his first two games, all while Nathaniel Hackett still can't figure out his timeouts.
Yeah. But what happened between week one and week two with that offense? Like, why, like, it didn't it seem like he was game managing much more in week one against a much worse team?
Yeah. I mean, it felt like he was game managing, but I think the difference was they needed it in this game. It's different when you need it. You bring something like, you saw it when the Saints got down, they let loose with Jameis, and then all of a sudden we got three interceptions. And the same thing could have happened in this game, but Tua got some guys that he can get it to and a coach that's going to scheme them up in a way that makes things easier. They were attacking the hell out of the Ravens secondary, and the Ravens have one of the best secondaries in football, even with the injuries that they have. They were so confused. They were blowing coverages here and there and getting run by. It seemed scary. And that was the worst or the best case scenario for them. It's not going to look like that every week, but of course not. Your quarterback threw for 470 and six touchdowns. Your two top receivers had almost 200 yards apiece and two touchdowns apiece. Like, if you guys can dial it back to 75% of that, still going to be incredibly tough team to beat. And I think it just came down to, we need it. We're desperate. Tua's either going to throw six touchdowns or six picks. Either way, we're not going to leave here with bullets in the holster.
Can I give like a small take on this one, which I think it's interesting. I kind of think Tua throwing a couple interceptions. Obviously they don't want him throwing two interceptions every week. Tua with an interception on the stat line, that's like an aggressive ball turnover, to me is indicative of a good thing with him and Mike McDaniels. Like, I think him being overly cautious, that's not the quarterback that was one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time. Like, that's not what we thought of him as, an anticipatory aggressive thrower when he was a freshman and sophomore at Alabama. That's something that developed post two ankle surgeries and hip surgery. And like, it was so weird. Like, I was looking at that stat line and you compare him to Lamar, who played flawlessly on Sunday, and Tua had the two glaring mistakes. And it's like, you know what? With Tua, I can live with that. I'm fine with him having aggressive ball turnovers.
I mean, it's going to pay off. The interception he had two interceptions, right? They were both like aggressive ball turnovers. And he had another one that could have been caught, if I remember correctly, that was an aggressive ball turnover. And he got lucky. Lamar got lucky too, because Lamar threw a game losing or game tying pick six that got dropped. But we're going to remember how perfect Lamar's game was. I don't know. Before we move on to the Ravens, because I think they're interesting. Also, I do want to just point out how amazing, like, it feels like the Dolphins are now a feel-good story.
Yeah.
And you remember this offseason? Like, it feels like it was 2-3 years ago that the team owner was being accused of racism and being punished for it. And it just felt like, and then the story about the Brady thing came out. It just felt like it was mm-hmm. all falling apart there. And they hired Mike McDaniel, who was a coach that no one had interviewed, was not on the radar of anyone. And then we found out Mike McDaniel was black. That was another like curveball of this offseason. And it was just a weird, uncomfortable, kind of embarrassing offseason for the Dolphins. And that's all washed away because they look good. And I found myself like liking this team, even though I'd like, was rooting for them and picked them to do well in the preseason. Like you kind of like the personality. You saw Mike on the sideline with them glasses on. He's a very likable guy, and this team seems very fun. Tyreek Hill gives absurd quotes after the games. They just seem like a fun kind of team, which is a far cry from what they were.
I was about to say, there were so many storylines that you forgot about the fact that Tyreek Hill came up with a podcast where he decided to anoint Tua as better than Patrick Mahomes for the entire offseason.
He didn't do that. He said that he was more accurate.
He talked around better. It. Catch more catchable ball, more accurate. One last thing before we move on this Dolphins team. And I have to seize on one thing you said, which is you think they're good enough to win the AFC. And that means two things. You think that they're good enough on a given day to beat the Kansas City Chiefs, and it means they're good enough on a given day to beat the Buffalo Bills. Based on what you've seen, do you really think that?
So we talked about this in the first podcast, we've never had so many teams that we thought could win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I absolutely think so. Like, would I pick them? No, I didn't pick them to be in my Final Four. I would not pick them right now. But what I've seen from them so far, and presumably they're only going to get better. Like, everyone has told me that Kyle Shanahan's offense the second year is when the quarterbacks really start to feel comfortable. So maybe they'll win it next year. But
yeah,
if they can come back on the Ravens the way that they did, because it's about scoring, right? That's what it comes down to. I know that sounds stupid, but the reason why you bring up the Chiefs and the Bills is because you have some trepidation about them being able to score against them. The Ravens seem to have no trouble scoring, and they could keep up and they could come back from three scores down in the second half. So can they? Yeah. I mean, I certainly would pick the field over them, but it's hard for me to imagine. Like, it feels like you're saying they can't. Would you say they can't?
I'm in a wait and see period, which is the worst non-take ever. Yeah. Like, I need two or three weeks as a more aggressive quarterback.
Yeah.
And I'll revisit, which is
I got a little confirmation bias leaking in. I told y'all he was going to be good. I told y'all they were going to be good. So now they had a good game and I'm ready to puff my chest out and say I was right. Yeah. I think you're taking the prudent approach, but that ain't fun. Your name's not on the show. You got to be fun when your name's on the show.
It's not that prudent, because it's also, I think, one of the big questions coming out of yesterday is how the bleep do you stop Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle? Because they're just, yes, there are other guys in the offense, Chase Edmonds, Gesicki, everyone contributed. But like, those guys are mutants.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are faster than, it's like, it's so simple that it's like, those guys are faster than everyone who's playing against them. And it's the same thing as even playing football at recess. When someone is just way faster than you, it's really difficult to keep them in front of you.
I don't know what that's like, but I've heard it's really difficult to when someone's way faster than you. And they also like aren't track guys. They're football players who are crazy fast. Like, the change direction, the athleticism, the ball tracking and catching, like, these are really good players that I don't want to be hyperbolic, but there aren't 32 corners in the league that can cover either of them.
No.
So like, Marlon Humphreys maybe can cover one of them, and he's not going to lock them down all game. They're that good. But then who's going to cover the other ones? And that's like, mm-hmm. to your point, we complicate this game so much, but sometimes it's really simple. They got so many dudes. They just got guys everywhere, and no one has, it's going to have to be a scheme. Like, you have to overcome them with scheme, tricking them and whatnot, because if they know what you're in, there's no hope. They're going to do deep crosses against zone. And they're going to do whatever they want, frankly, against man. Because what it comes down to, this reminds me of when I would play against Randy Moss. you can have anything 20 and under, which is a bad strategy to play in a game because first down's only 10 yards. And I saw the corners in this game doing similar thing where it's like, you can have anything 20 and under.
The thing is, though, like the crazy thing is, and this is, I'm going to blaspheme for a second. DBs would rather see Randy Moss with the ball in front of them with 10 yards to make an open field tackle than either Tyreek Hill or Jaylen Waddle. Those guys are, they're like, they're tackle breakers. They're hybrid running back receivers.
That is blasphemous, but I think you're probably right. Randy Moss is fast as hell, but he's not breaking anybody's ankles. He's not, he doesn't have the same running back skills. I think, let's not get carried away blaspheming against the great Randy Moss, but I think you're right.
My favorite player of all time.
Yeah, I think you're right. If you give Tyreek Hill a hitch, the receivers are, or DBs are much more nervous about that than Randy Moss.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, on Añejo Tequila. Came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, a little bit of Ravens talk.
Yeah.
Pay Lamar Jackson everything that he wants. Ravens talk over.
Okay, that was the best Lamar game I've seen since 2019. But the question, what do you feel like if the Ravens can't hold a lead? Because that's the whole Ravens offense thing, running the ball, Lamar being dominant, getting first downs, and holding leads.
Yeah, the Ravens offense there is cause for concern because what makes them so special is what you mentioned. So Lamar had a big, crazy long run. And that's the funny thing about that is the only time runs like that happen is when teams are trying to stop Lamar from running because they load up the box and they don't have a deep safety because they're like, we're going to stop Lamar. When actuality, what you're doing is creating a boom or bust scenario. When you play a softer zone, Lamar will get 6, 7, 8 and go down. When you load the box like that, all he has to do is, or you have one person miss an assignment, or he breaks one tackle and then he's out the gate and no one's going to catch him. Put that aside. The issue with the Ravens offense for me is one of the things you love about the Ravens offense is that they 4th and 2, 4th and 3, go for it. They'll be fine because they have the numbers advantage in the running game. They had 2 fourth downs in this game. That cost them one in the red zone. Lamar fumbled, or I guess it was a fumbled snap. And then the Dolphins went on a 97-yard scoring drive. Another one in the second half, I think it was the fourth quarter. They went for it on fourth down, trying to put the game away around midfield. Lamar did not get it again. They gave the ball to him. He didn't succeed. Those are things that the Ravens are always supposed to get done. That's what makes them special, to your point. And there was another pass where he rolled out to the right and threw it to a wide open, likely the rookie tight end who dropped it. And so I guess I'm not worried because those feel like aberrations. I think that Lamar Jackson is going to get most fourth downs in the future. And I think that they're not going to drop that many passes. They're not going to blow as many coverages. This is not a team that has a history of doing this stuff. They were extremely injured last year and gave up some wins in that situation or gave up some leads in that situation. But I don't expect this to be a problem going forward, which is why I was like, let's just, to me, it doesn't feel like there's a whole bunch to talk about here. It's like pay Lamar, the Ravens will be fine.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Figure is worth explaining, but I'm totally with you. Even the blown coverage that led to the final touchdown, like those things won't happen in higher leverage situations.
All right, from one comeback to another, Kyler Murray. Like I think he dodged some storylines, some negative storylines, like he was dodging those defensive linemen at the end of that game, because him and Cliff and Steve Keim, they was going to be under a bunch of bad news this week if they couldn't have pulled out that miraculous victory. And Kyler, I mean, the film study clause, I get it, I guess, but he can do that. Like, he could just take over the game. That game-winning touchdown run he had, I think they said Kyler Murray ran 87 yards, but he really only gained 3 yards for that big game-tying or set up the game-tying touchdown. But Kyler did all that, and Cliff still was trying to get himself fired. How the hell do you get a delay a game on a two-point play? You only have, like, you go into a game with just a couple two-point plays. You knew you were going to be going for two if you scored a touchdown. This reminds me, and it's just as egregious as the Nathaniel Hackett issues from week one and week two.
Yeah.
Because it's not a surprise. Like, I'm willing to grant your coach some leniency if there's like a unpredictable situation. This is exactly what you wanted to happen. You wanted to score a touchdown and you wanted to go for two. They scored a touchdown and then they got to delay a game because they couldn't get the play in. And again, Kyler Murray bailed them out by hitting AJ Green in the back of the end zone for the 2-point play. And then the overtime period was crazy.
I'd love to know what you think about this, because I left that game actually not thinking I learned anything about the Cardinals or Kyler Murray. And I say that because, like, yeah, he was incredible and those plays are things that only he can do. I think I knew that. I think I knew he's like one of the greatest athletes we've ever seen. And like, in broken plays and out of structure, he's elite. He also looked completely listless for the first half of the game. They're down 20-0. And like, that's sort of the tale of Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury we've always seen, is that they're just extended periods of lethargy and bad play and moments of brilliance. And like, I don't know. I mean, look, the 2-point conversion play, the delay of game is egregious. And they were tempting fate with that their entire comeback. I just still don't know. Kyler, pretty good. I don't know.
The defense played a lot better in the second half. Nobody on the Raiders really put up good numbers like you would expect for any of their big playmakers. And Hunter Renfrow was really, really trying to throw the game away. He fumbled twice in key situations. They got one back, and then the second one was picked up by Murphy, returned for a touchdown in overtime to end the game. But it didn't seem like either team really wanted to win. Like, Hollywood Brown made an incredible catch. And Hollywood made a crazy catch earlier. And then in this situation, towards the end of the game, I guess you don't want to call it a drop because he got hit, but it seemed like the way he caught the ball was like a running back trying to catch the ball. Yeah. Like, he caught it away from his body. It was like he'd never run a 7 route with a safety or against cover 2 before, and he got hit and coughed it up. So they all were trying to give the game away, but Kyler Murray took over, made it possible, and Hunter Renfrow just gave it away. So
yeah,
I think we all picked the Raiders to be the worst team in the group of death.
Yeah.
The Broncos are giving them a fight, but they sure seem like that was a good bet.
That's actually more of a toss up to me than I thought after week two. Not that I think the Raiders are particularly great, but I don't know if the Broncos are better, to be completely honest, based on what we've seen.
I'm pretty sad. So I want to try something new. Let's do Dominique Foxworth, defense attorney. All right. Give me some positions, whether I believe in them or not, I will defend them.
Okay. Let's start with a quick hitter. I'm going to lob you a softball. Okay. I know you're a world-class defense attorney, but you got to warm up here. We know that you like Dak Prescott. We know he's your guy. He's been your guy for a while. Okay. Cooper Rush beat the Super Bowl runner-up Bengals yesterday. And I want you to defend Dak Prescott. But what I want you to defend is Dak Prescott as good as we thought going into week one of the season if they have played like this through two games?
I mean, I refuse. Can we get this thrown out? Like, isn't there like a pre-trial situation where you can get stuff thrown out before it actually goes to court? This is like absurd. Cooper Rush had one mediocre game that they happen to win against a Bengals team that none of us think are really that good. And you guys are trying to, you are trying to come at Dak Prescott. Like, who's the judge in this? I demand a judge. Christina, can you be our judge? This should not have to go to trial. Please chime in and agree with me.
I'll settle out of court.
Oh, you'll settle out of court.
I'll settle out of court on this one.
There's nothing to settle. No, I want a mistrial. I don't know what it's called before you get to it, but I do not want to go to trial on this.
The charges against Dak Prescott are dropped. He is a very good quarterback, and okay, Cooper Rush is probably not.
Don't waste my time with that. I need Cooper Rush gotta have like three good games in a row before I'll even entertain this conversation.
Well, and this is, I really wanted this as a lead into the second thing I want you to defend. We've talked about this. You said even after yesterday, the Bengals can win the AFC North. They've lost to Cooper Rush and Mitchell Trubisky. Defend the take that the Bengals can still win the AFC North.
Yeah. Okay. This is legitimate. The take is the Steelers aren't good and they got worse from when they beat them. They only lost to the Steelers because the fluke injury to their long snapper. So I don't think the Steelers are real competitors. The Browns are not good either. They blew a game to the Jets, the team who always wants to blow games. And the Ravens are already piling up injuries and gave away a game that they should have won. So I picked the Ravens to win this division. If you make me bet, I'm still sticking with the Ravens. However, you're asking me, can the Bengals still win it? Absolutely, they still can win it. Joe Burrow's pocket presence is incredible in spite of the fact that he holds onto the ball too long. And they have possibly one of the best, like, three-headed monsters in the league in Mixon, Chase, and Burrow. So given where they are in this division, I think that they have a chance. And like I mentioned, the Ravens already got injuries piling up. They're down to their third left tackle. They got injuries in the secondary. That's was the problem for them last year, and it could be the problem again for them this year. So, yes, Joe Burrow, who went on a miraculous run last year, they could still win the North.
Okay. I have some follow-up questions that I think will decide if this defense is good enough. Last year, Patrick Mahomes, and I'm going to tie this all back in. Last year, Patrick Mahomes struggled for those 6 weeks with two high safeties, and mm-hmm. he was getting hit a lot. He's holding onto the ball. And I remember you were like, this is a simple concept. Patrick will figure it out. And then it took longer than we thought. Mm-hmm. That's working against Burrow, and he's holding the ball, and the same thing is happening. And how much of this is on the line? How much is on Joe Burrow? And how much of this is fixable over the course of the season if we think last year's peak was somewhat of a fluke?
It's on Zach Taylor is who it's on. Like, just in general, that's one of the things that I appreciate the most about the Nathaniel Hackett saga is the blame is going where it belongs. I think we're so reticent to criticize coaches because we don't know what's going on all that often on the field. Like, you'll fire a quarterback, you'll blame an offensive line. We're all more prone to look at the situation and go with the guy's name we know or the guy who we see messing up. But oftentimes, I think it's on the coach. And I think this week, it feels like that. If there are not, do we think that Joe Burrow is capable of reading a defense? I think the answer is yes. I guess if we're doing the whole court thing, I should let you answer the question, but I'm not going to. The answer is yes. Joe Burrow can read a defense. So why isn't he throwing it to open people? To me, it suggests that the play design is not up to par. And to be fair, I have not grinded. Do you grind or grind it or ground? I have not grinded the all 22 of the Bengals. I'll go do that after this so I can know for sure whether I'm right or wrong. But my guess is Joe Burrow does like to hold onto the ball, but Joe Burrow's not holding onto the ball for kicks. He's holding the ball because nobody's open. He should still learn from Tom Brady and throw the ball away a little bit more often. But if we're blaming somebody, we're blaming the coach. I'm not having this blaming of Joe Burrow just yet.
I mean, shouldn't you get some blame? Everyone anointed him a top five quarterback of the NFL. And he's got, it's not just a three-headed monster. It's also T. Higgins, who's back, yeah. Who's like a second number one receiver. Like, at some point, feeding your weapons too and just making the simple plays.
I would say that Joe Burrow deserves blame for the sacks.
Okay. Yeah.
Even if the line
his line is getting crushed, by the way. His line is getting crushed for all this.
But getting crushed and missing blocks is one thing. Getting sacked is another thing. Most sacks, I think, can be avoided by quarterbacks dirting the ball or getting rid of it. I think Joe Burrow actually had One of Micah Parsons' sacks stands out in my memory. Mm-hmm. That it's either Joe Burrow's holding on it too long or nobody was open, where Micah Parsons started on the left side of the line and ended up all the way on the right side, coming back to the left before getting the sack. That's holding on to the ball too long. So yeah. Joe Burrow, I'm willing to chalk up the sacks to Joe Burrow. Get rid of it. If the play design is so poor, throw it at somebody's feet so you don't get sacked and get yourself hurt. You already have a ACL in your history. So I'm fine with that. But the fact that the offense is unproductive, to me, given how good the offense was at times last year and given the upgrades to the offensive line, that's on the coach. Do they have talent? Yes. Should they be bad at offense? No. To me, that falls on the coach. I don't know how we can blame anyone, because it's not like they're just – I don't know. It doesn't look a mess or disjointed. It looks like sloppy, which to me falls more on the coach than on the players.
The prosecution would like it to be noted that Dominique Foxworth is taking all credit away from the sacks from the great defensive players, Micah Parsons and TJ Watt. Those sacks are now Zach Taylor sacks.
They are Zach Taylor sacks and Joe Burrow sacks. So Micah, deal with it. You're going to have 15 this year anyway, so you can lend a couple to Zach and Joe. All right. I don't know. We don't have a judge to tell me whether I'm right or wrong, so Christina won't chime in, even though I asked her to. She's being mean to me.
I'm right here. I was listening to everything you had to say. I don't know if I fully agree with you that the Bengals can win it all. I don't know if I'm convinced yet.
Let's go.
Okay. Well, I'll take one L, I guess.
1-1.
All right. What's the last one? Break the tie.
Okay, the last one here. You know who the laughingstock of the NFL is?
Oh.
It's Nathaniel Hackett. It's Nathaniel Hackett. You know why? His home fans are chanting at him to know the play clock. Because you know what a coach should know? The play clock. You know who skated on all of this? Mr. Unlimited. Mr. We Care a Lot. Mr. $242 million. Mr. Always complaining about never getting an MVP vote. Mr. I get traded to the Broncos, we're immediately a Super Bowl contender because of this loaded offense of three tight ends and two elite running backs and good receivers. Defend Russell Wilson skating all of this. Why doesn't he deserve blame for how the Broncos have played over the last two games?
You already said it. Nathaniel Hackett. Stop it. This is the easiest walk in and walk out.
Can it be both? Can't they both be blamed?
The jury's only going to deliberate for 36 seconds. Nathaniel Hackett has had the worst start of a career of any coach that I can remember in recent history. And if you don't think he can manage the game well, what makes you think he can design offense well? He's the first time play caller as offensive coordinator, and he's a terrible game manager. Like, this game was worse than last game. And I watched this game. So I listened to the commentators talking about how they went back and revised their decision-making process in a game where they took a delay of game penalty, which backed them up to a 59-yard field goal. And they decided to punt it despite the fact that they kicked the 64-yarder last week. And they're in altitude this week on a third and short. They ran an option again, taking the ball out of Russell's hands. They ran a tight end like speed option, and they called a timeout when he was like on the 3-yard line rather than taking the delay a game again that they shouldn't have taken. They called a timeout to save 5 yards to eventually kick the field goal anyway, which was irrelevant at that point. Like, this is absurd. You can blame Russell if you want, but the reason why he does not need my defense is because Nathaniel's doing it for him. He's a big meat shield for everything that's going wrong in Denver right now. You can't blame anybody but Nathaniel Hackett. The defense rests.
The final argument from the prosecution would just like to point out that we would also like to blame Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson.
All right. I don't think we need the judge to come in and break this tie since we all gave up. But Christina, you can pile on Nathaniel Hackett too if you want to.
I mean, we've said it all. It's not good. It's not great. We've said it all.
Oh, man. Aren't you happy you're a Steelers fan? I mean, you got a coach that's not stupid.
Exactly. I have a coach. I don't know if I have a team, but I have a coach.
You don't have a team. You do not have a team. I know you don't have a team, but you do have a coach. All right. Let's check in on our bets last week, Charlie, before mm-hmm. we wrap this thing up.
All right. Let's go through this real quick. 49ers. They covered. We won. We agreed on that bet.
We made some people some money, but we also have some sadness about Trey Lance. That sucks for him. It sucks for that team. Jimmy Garoppolo, they made the right choice. I was never one who was opposed to them bringing Jimmy Garoppolo back because I didn't think that the locker room was clamoring for Jimmy, but it was an ingenious move now. They got Jimmy back for $6 million, and they have a team that's still a Super Bowl contender. Having Jimmy at quarterback is like it lowers the ceiling, but it raises the floor. So they're going to try to win the same way they've been winning is around Jimmy's limitations. O-line's not as good as it was when they made it all the way to the Super Bowl. So we'll see if Jimmy can compensate for that.
I got one quick follow-up question on this. And this is just, I want to broaden out a tiny bit on Trey Lance real quick, and we'll get back to our bets. Should they still view him as the quarterback of the future? And the reason I say that is he didn't really win the job going into this season. Going into next year, he is a quarterback who his athleticism has been super touted, and he's going to be coming off a major ankle injury. He's not going to have really played football in 4 years. Most of his rookie contract's going to be done. And like, I think that they'll still view him as the day one starter because they gave up so many picks for him. Isn't that just a sunk cost fallacy? Why do they have to give him the job?
Yep, exactly. I mean, I think you could argue this is a sunk cost fallacy, but it's also like committing to like being a flip flopper is not good either. You commit and see what you can get out of it. But I think this question only gets interesting if Jimmy plays well and they make a deep run. Otherwise, I think it's obvious you go back to Trey Lance when he's healthy, but it's going to get real sticky out there because I think Jimmy only signed a 1 year, $6 million, right?
Yeah, 1 year, six.
So it's going to get real sticky at the end of the season if Jimmy leaves them on a deep run. They kind of have no choice but to re-sign him, even if he's not that good, because they can't bring Trey Lance back in off injury to not perform. So I'd say that Trey Lance is still the guy unless Jimmy balls out, and then they're going to be, I guess it's a good problem to have, but they're going to have a real problem there. What's our next bet?
All right, next one. We predicted the Rams would not cover against the Falcons. And pat us on the back. We're both geniuses there. The Falcons did it. They went full Falcons. They came back from 28-3 only to lose. The Rams won but didn't cover. That's a great bet on our end.
Good. So we're on fire. We're making people money. Making people money. All right. So we only did four, right?
We only did four.
All right. Third bet. What do we have?
Broncos did not cover against the Texans. This is a plus one for me, a minus one for you, Foxworth, because really? Yeah, you thought the Broncos were going to cover. I called that neck shaming. I knew Davis Mills would come through, and he would cover points for the Texans by the length of his neck.
I don't think that you can give the credit to Davis Mills. You have to give the credit to the Texans defense, because 9 points is not Davis Mills out there killing them. But that's
thank
fair.
You, Nathaniel Hackett. Thank you, yeah, Nathaniel exactly. Hackett.
I think there's maybe it's too late. We should have bet against Nathaniel Hackett, but I think the line is going to reflect that going forward. There will be a Hackett tax.
Should we do that every week?
Oh, yeah. I would like to. Let's just keep it going. We bet against, well, we'll see. I think there's going to be a Hackett tax going forward. We're not going to get any good lines with them because everyone's down on our buddy Hackett.
And then the last one we got, the Bengals. They lost outright. And we both lost on this one because we thought they were going to cover by 10. And you know what? I think by losing that bet, we can all agree Dak overrated.
You're trying to
I'm just kidding.
On an angry note for me. Oh, my gosh. I'm not going to get drawn into all of this. I actually should look forward to this because it gives me another easy take, because that's how I became on Team Dak. It was such an easy take. Everyone was down on Dak saying, don't pay him. Blah, 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 blah. He's not that good. And it was obvious that he was better than everyone thought. And now people are trying to corner me into acting like Dak is Patrick Mahomes. I never said he was that good. He's just a lot better than y'all was treating him. He's good enough to get paid. All right. Everyone's favorite Foxworth is here. My favorite, your favorite, Ashley, my wife, back for another episode of Roses and Thorns. Hey, buddy. How are you?
Hi, honey. Thank you for inviting me back. I'm excited. I'm honored to be welcomed back. I'm also a little nervous, you know. Last time I wasn't, it was like talking to you. This time I feel like it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's still talking to you, but I feel like I understand, how like the sophomore slumps happen in albums, because it's like you came out, you did not great, but you did it. And now you're coming out again and you're scared.
What's an album that was a sophomore slump, or an artist who had the sophomore slump that had you most disappointed?
I don't know. Okay. I have no idea. I mean, last time he mentioned College Dropout, late registration, was that his second?
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't as good as College Dropout to me, but it wasn't a slump. So I don't know. I wasn't expecting that question. I came.
Didn't realize you can't go off the cuff.
I can, but I don't know. I can't think of an album that was a second album where I really loved someone's first album. I don't know. See, one difference between me and him. When I don't know something, I say, I don't know. Conversation's over. I don't pull things out of my behind because I feel like I have to know things and have an answer. That's humility. That's grace. And you're welcome for it. Admitting what you don't know.
Nah, it's called confidence. You say it with confidence and then it becomes the truth.
I know. I have a best friend like that. And I always believe everything she says. And then, I did when I was like 15. And now that I am about 40, I'm like, you are a lie. Anyway, thank you for having me back. I'm proud of you for your work.
Okay, that's enough of this nonsense. All right, roses and thorns.
But I am.
No small talk that involves mushiness. I'm not here.
Okay, it's not fully mushy. But seriously, like, he's doing something new, and I've been around him as he's been struggling to do new things.
Who are you talking to? Who are you talking
struggling?
You're saying he? I'm here. You're talking to me. Who are you talking to?
Oh, because I'm imagining that someone else is listening.
Someone else is listening, but they like to listen in. They don't want you to talk to them.
Okay, well, I've been proud of you, but I do
I'm
have
struggling?
To say you were
what
doing.
What am I struggling? I never struggled at anything in my whole
you
life.
You are not struggling, but I feel like you're trying to figure out how to do something new that you haven't. And you haven't had your own podcast before. You haven't, and like trying to like be yourself and do the sports stuff that you're supposed to do while also like getting people to not want to turn it off after 1 second. Like that's, you know, it's something new.
Well,
and different,
that's why I brought
I'm
you
proud
here.
Of you. And on Thursday, I was down in the basement. Maybe I was not feeling my best for reasons that I won't disclose. I cannot have 3 drinks apparently in the evening anymore. So maybe I was hungover. But I was listening to him and he was doing all these other you, honey, remember when you were doing all these other podcasts and you were like trying to advertise yourself? And so this could be my thorn, although I wasn't thinking of it as a thorn. I heard you talking about Russell Wilson, and apparently that was like a subject that was coming up on Thursday.
Yeah.
And I didn't love it. Like, if you want to say his team lost a game, he could have done something better, say that. But I heard you say like things about like, do people think he's phony or not? I don't know him. You don't know him. You don't know if people think he's phony or not. But as someone's wife, I'm your wife, I hate hearing someone else's husband talked about. Like, it like pains my soul. And to have those words coming out of your mouth, really, really, not that I think like Sierra's listening to this, but like, just that's a man, that's a woman's husband. And I just, as your wife,
that's
and
funny.
You're somebody who's been talked about before. There was this guy when he played for the Ravens who sat right in front of us, who held up a sign. And honestly, it's witty. It was witty, but it made me want to cry. That was Fox worthless. This was a Ravens fan and Dominique was a Raven. Literally one time you got an interception and he held it up and complained that you didn't run back enough. And he was like, he's still worthless. Like, you must have dated his daughter or something in high school and offended this. I have no idea like why he hated you so much.
I was a virgin until I met you. That was it. Virginal. Well, I'm sorry to Russell.
So don't talk
Sierra.
About people's husbands.
So I don't talk about, I should be kinder to people, not only the married ones though, right? So
okay, don't talk about anybody. Okay, you're right, that's not fair. That's,
no, it's good.
That's
I need to check marital status.
No, don't check marital status. But like, either way, there's someone's son, there's somebody, I don't know. I just hate when people I love are talked about. Like, if it's like for, I get you work for a company like where your job is to analyze sports, so talk with people as players, but like, you don't know if that man's phony or not. You don't know him. You don't know what he acts like all the time. And Sierra loves him and his children love him and his family loves him and they don't want to hear him talked about. So unless it's like on the field stuff or on the court or whatever arena it's being played in, I don't think you should talk about it.
So that's a pre-thorn. You out here giving pre-thorns.
You know what, that can be the thorn. I don't have to have another thorn. I don't even know if I do have another thorn. That can be the thorn.
I'm sure you can find one. Can we try to get positive now, roses?
Yes. Okay. One, that you're doing a good job and workshopping and working hard to do this new thing.
Boo, this is uncomfortable.
Two, that you pick the kids up from school on Friday. So normally I do all the schlepping around of children and we're always rushing between two campuses. And so I picked the little two up first. And every day since they started back to school, they've been asking me to stop at at a pet store. I think it's like PetSmart or Petco, somewhere that we pass. And my dumb behind's like, okay, kids, maybe one day when we're not rushing to pick up your big sister from school. And so on Friday, another Rose, you went and played football at recess with Declan, our son and his friends, on football Friday. So that's two Roses in one day. But then he picked them up from school also, and he stopped them at the pet store, the little two, and he managed to come home with zero pets. And that is the main part, the Rose for me. One, I didn't have to go. Two, we don't have another pet in this house because of me. You see me looking around. If you're looking, like, I'm looking not at the camera a lot because we have a creepy cat.
He's not creepy. He's just a cat.
Okay. Our cat Lamar is going to jump on me, I'm fearing, and knock me out of my little stool. And I can't even blame Dominique for the creepy cat. I got the cat. I saw a mouse in the house once. The kids wanted a pet. I'm allergic to dogs. The mouse inspired me to get them a cat.
Well, we have a cat, and the pet store was a fun trip. We walked. We had a good time. They definitely wanted pets and borderline threw some tantrums, but they got over it eventually. So that's a good Rose, I guess. And I dominated those kids at recess.
It was ridiculous. Business. No, you could have just let them.
Don't invite me to football Friday. No, don't invite me to football Friday if we're not playing football on Friday. I will not be coming back until they get that game up.
Was he sore or not, though, after playing 9-year-olds on football Friday? We were at a store later on in the afternoon. Was like, put your elbow into my back. And I was like, what is happening? Can we just buy this elbow and leave? You're old. Knees, so my hips, I think actually a few more football Fridays and the kids will beat you. You'll be too beat down for them.
That's possible. All right, thorn me.
Okay, my thorn is what I said earlier. That's my main thorn. But I have a secondary thorn, which I just thought of when I said we went and got a cell phone later. So we broke down, judge it if you want, and got our oldest a cell phone because she's left on the campus by herself sometimes when I'm rushing between. Anyway, there are reasons that help us.
Explain nothing to these people.
For her to have a cell phone, even though I did not imagine getting her one at this, like, she can't drive yet. What does she need a cell phone for? Anyway, she got a cell phone. And I realized when I was setting it up, I was like, oh, we need to make sure she's sharing her setup as a child cell phone. So we were like, oh, we got to set up the location sharing with both of us. And it reminded me of something that I realized and re-realized time and time again, that Dominic doesn't share his location with me.
Hell no.
And I just don't know why. Like, what are you doing? I know you and I both know. It's not like you're about to say you're out here doing things. You're not. Like, at least we're going to hope you're not. Whatever. I'm not in these streets either, but I do go out to dinners than you do. I'm more social.
I'm not an 11-year-old girl. That's why I don't.
So what? I share my location with you.
Okay, well, don't stop. I never asked you to share. Okay,
as a woman, it actually makes me feel better too. Honestly, I did stop at one point, like just being kind of pissy, and only shared it with my sisters and brother. But you're my husband. Like, why? Like, if I'm in danger, like, I share every Uber ride with you that I do. I want my location to be shared with you. Honestly, it helps me because I lose my cell phone so much. But why? Like, what is your reason for not sharing?
You want to know where I'm at? Call me. I don't know. I'm older than you by a whole year. And that year matters a lot. A year and a few
months, let's be honest.
I don't like having my location shared. It's just creepy. Why do you need to know where I'm at? Call me if you want to know where I'm at. You want to know what I'm doing.
I don't think I'd ever look at it. My sister shares her location with me. Obviously, Avery now does too. Like, I'm not about to be checking for it, but it's just off principle. Like, why are you so opposed to it? That's what upsets me.
You said our 11-year-old daughter got a cell phone and we had to make sure her location was shared. Exactly. I'm almost 40-year-old man.
But why wouldn't you? I share mine with you.
Because I don't want to. I don't like it. It feels creepy.
I'm not going to be like spying on you.
It's nothing to spy on. It's not the point. I don't need to share.
Okay, well, you know what? Just because I don't like the way you're acting, I'm coming back with another thorn. And we said we would follow up with this, so let's follow up with it. If you can see behind him, the cork board still looks awful. It's not even centered. It has, like, he took down the one thing that was good about it was our kids'
artwork. Don't tell anybody. It's the secret. It's a secret.
That it looks ugly?
No. Then they'll come and watch on YouTube and figure out how beautiful it is right now. I mean, it's nice.
No, it's not, Dominique. It looks awful.
I mean, it's a representation of me. That's it. You are in a beautiful background, and I'm in a dark, sad basement with nothing on the court.
You want people to like feel like it's a representation of you. It's like you want their sympathy. But we had this conversation last week. We're not going to have it again. Another follow-up from last week is he killed the parents' names this week. He learned them.
Yeah.
And he used them. He was like, I ain't practicing these for nothing. Hey, Tony, what? Like he there was no Mr. Tonys. Social at the game. I know, but I'm, you know, just use the mock name. He knows there are no Tonys because he knows their names now.
You are, I don't think they are. You are perfect, just all roses and no thorns. But since we are bringing up names, guess who yelled out the wrong kid's name at a football game? Like, my son's flag football team has three people on it that don't look like everyone else. Like three white kids on the flag football team. You yelled out the wrong white kid's name when he caught the ball, and it made me so happy. I was joyous.
In my defense, first of all, I would like to say this is not my show. This is not supposed to be thorns about me because that's not what we're here for. But anyway, I can take it. I can take it. It was messed up of me. In my defense, he really did. The dad was like, yeah, you're not even the first person to do that. That's number one. Number two, the football team has been the same basically for like four seasons right now. And two new boys just joined. One of them I know, so that was easy. And then another new boy just joined. And he happened to look just like Orpe. From the sidelines, watching him on the field, he looked really similar to the other boy. I apologize. I owned it. I mess up sometimes. We fall down. We get up.
I know
his name now. I didn't use it, though, even though I knew it, because it felt like it was too like, oh, now I'm going to show you I know your name. So I just said number two the rest of the time.
Great. Are we all thorned out, rosed up? We good?
You're great. You're wonderful.
I love you.
I love you, too. Bye, y'all.
Let's end it. You know what I'm not going to do this week? I'm not going to forget to thank all the people like I did the last 2 weeks. So Christina Buswell, Judge Christina, thank you so much. Addie Khan, you're the best. Sarah Abbott, outstanding. And Charlie, I guess, thank you too.
Thank you all. I love all of you.
All right. See you next time.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.